Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Well, thank you, Dave Slade, and thank you for joining us for one of our last daily podcasts of the postseason. We've got one more game. I'm sure we'll talk about it afterwards.
I think we might discuss Game 7 afterwards.
We might talk about Game 7, but John Manuel and J.J. Cooper with you here at Baseball America talking about what we really hoped we would get in this World Series, which has been a seven-game series. We've had three really good games, two very good, tense thrillers, a little bit of a cakewalk in Game 6.
Although Joe Madden did not think it was a cakewalk.
It was a 9-3 Cubs victory, and even though the Cubs consistently had a big lead, I was at my son's baseball practice, which we didn't leave the field till 9:15, and as soon as it was 9:15, I checked my phone and yelled out to the kids as we left the field, 7-0 Cubs! And, our coach has already gone. I went to a World Series game. I think he's going to try to go to Cleveland tonight. This is a series that I've seen catch the attention of 11 and 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds. I'm not sure how many of them are going to watch the game tonight.
My fourth grader is like, I mean, one of her best friends, she's a Cubs fan. And so, like, every day, Natalie asked me in the morning, you know, hey, who won last night?
And well, the Cubs won last night, but you wouldn't know it by the usage of Aroldis Chapman and the way that he was deployed last night. So that's one of the main things we want to talk about. I do want to talk about the egregious Indians outfield, their defense and their offense. It's just bad and what they could do about it. But let's talk about Game 6 and how it pertains to Game 7, because JJ, your head was exploding on Twitter last night, and you weren't alone. Joe Madden's explanation, which I don't know that you heard, so Joe Madden's explanation on the field with Tom Verducci after the game of why he used Chapman was that was the time of the lineup to use him, which I agree. It was Lindor, there were two runners on, and he faced their best. That explanation, I think, actually does not... It shouldn't be questioned. It actually should be applauded. And if Terry Francona had done it, I think he would be applauded. Oh. The part that is really inexcusable, and I've talked about it on the podcast several times, is how do you not have someone ready to go in case you want to take him out? And he said he left Chapman out for the first batter because nobody was loose yet. And that is a mistake any way you slice it.
If you said that Chapman comes in, gets Lindor out, and then he was done, which I know that that's probably being almost too aggressive. Like, okay, you got him out of the big problem, and Chapman throws at that point, yes, there was high-stress pitches, but so few pitches that it's like it's Game 7, it doesn't affect how much he's available.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. You know, hey, yeah, I know it was a 5-run lead, but Lindor's up, key situation, he got us out of it. And then with the 5-run lead, we felt comfortable in the 8th and 9th handing it over to Justin Grimm or
Travis Wood, Pedro Strop,
or, you know, okay, fine. No complaints here at all. Even the sending him back out for the 8th, and then obviously in the Cubs half of the 8th, I mean, the Cubs top of the 9th, we then have the Rizzo home run, and it's like there is zero reason at that point for Chapman to be in. I do not understand, and I do think that this is a fair criticism to make, the game got away from Joe Madden there, in that that happened, and he's like, oh, well, okay, well, now we don't need...
They did, though. As soon as the home run was hit, they did show Chris Bosio getting on the floor.
Right.
But that's not the problem.
You should have been before that.
They aren't in the mode of, we should have someone with a ball ready to get loose or ready to start using their Jaeger bands and start tubing at a moment's notice. And the fact that they don't is stunning to me for an organization that, JJ, we've talked about how in so many ways they seem to have every base covered. And that's one base. The only guy who doesn't have it covered is, frankly, Joe Madden.
But the thing that you're trying, the thing that I just could not get over last night with that is that it is very, very hard to lose. It's not impossible, but even a 5-run lead, it's very hard to lose a 5-run lead.
Right. You can
in the eighth inning.
Even if it was still a 5-run lead in the ninth, You can trade a run for an out every time. I know those outs are hard to get. But I totally endorsed bringing in Chapman when he brought him in.
Right.
I just there's really no excuse to be made for not having someone already ready to get hot fast the second that the league got bigger.
And the thing about it is that it comes back to you have to win two games. Winning game, yes, you have to win game six first. But winning game six and not winning game seven makes winning game six absolutely immaterial. And if you look at it right now, I know if you're a Cubs fan, what you're looking at and you're saying, okay, it's Hendricks, and then there's a lot of belief in, okay, then it's John Lester.
Right, right.
And because, well, the other thing we saw from
which I'm honestly fine with, again, if Joe Madden's thought process is, hopefully it's not John Madden's thought process. Hopefully he's not thinking, boom, go Chapman. But hopefully his thought process was, if Chapman's not available, at least I have Lester. If that's his thought process, I don't necessarily agree with it, but it's at least a thought process.
But the thing we also saw in
see Lester closing.
But what we saw in this, there's a couple of things with that, though. One, we saw that basically Madden at this point believes in two relievers.
Correct.
In his entire pen.
Correct. The day before, in Game 5, he believed in three, but Carl Edwards Jr. lost his trust. So
essentially
all these
now,
guys are low trust outside of Montgomery
and
Chapman.
It is Mike Montgomery and Aroldis Chapman. And what we have now, the problem I have with that is this doesn't mean Aroldis Chapman's not going to pitch. I know people talk about, well, he only threw 20 pitches. 20 pitches where you get up and you pitch high leverage in the seventh, then you sit down, then you get back up and you pitch the eighth, and then you sit down.
And then you pitch
the ninth is not the same as a 20-pitch inning. It's not
the same. It's not the same. And don't forget, he tweaked that right knee or the right leg on that play, bang bang play. Hey, let's give Chapman credit. He actually covered first for us.
And by the way, give credit to the camera crew also, because that was an amazing.
That was fantastic camera work and replay work, and it was quick.
Mm-hmm.
Replay was quick there, but also we got to see a little burst of that athleticism that we talked about with Chapman, because he didn't start busting it the first, but once he did, he outran Francisco Lindor. I mean, it was only like 4 or 5 steps, but he got the top speed.
He has burst.
He had burst. He had short area quickness, JJ.
But, again, it's not that you're not going to see Chapman throw tonight, but what it does mean, if you are the Indians right now, if you go into tonight and what you're looking at it is that, okay, you have your ace. Short rest, but you have your ace.
You have your best starter possible ready
and
to go.
And you also go into tonight. If he can only give you 3 or 4 good innings, that you have Andrew Miller for, again, I Andrew Miller tonight, I do think of it as almost like Houston Street against Cuba, where you say, here's the ball, and okay, I need you to be honest with me. You tell me when you're starting to lose it. And I'm going to be watching, and I might pull you.
Hey, you have Cody Allen for as long as you need to.
And you've got Cody Allen for as long as you need to. And then, and I mean, I'm serious when I say this, and then if it goes extra, you got Brian Shaw.
Correct.
So you are set up to be so aggressive tonight, because there is no reason to not see Andrew Miller for 2 to 3 tonight.
It's just
at the least.
Yeah, it's fascinating that we have gotten to this game 7, where basically certainly Cleveland wishes we weren't at game 7.
But they are set up much better than Chicago is, I would say.
And they are. And that's the thing is that game 7 has set up for, it's the only time that the Indians have the pitching advantage is either when Kluber starts, or it's at least a push. If not advantage, Kluber.
And I would say advantage.
And then any time that you go to the bullpen and it's not Chapman, because Chapman again gets you to push with Miller.
See,
and I'd rather have Chapman than Allen. And I'd rather have Chapman than Shaw. But that's the only time. So the Cubs, by the fact that you're facing Kluber, arrested Miller, arrested Allen, arrested Shaw, the Cubs are never going to have the pitching advantage that they always have had in this series otherwise, and B, any chance that they'd be at push in the bullpen, they reduced by the way that Madden used Chapman.
Because
put themselves at a disadvantage.
Because, I mean, we were talking about this going into Game 6, that if the, you know, that okay, if you need him in Game 6, if it was a close game, you use Chapman for 2 to 3 if you need to. But if you don't need him in Game 6, then you really are talking Game 7. Because, let's talk about John Lester. Yes, we're going to see John Lester tonight.
I would anticipate we will see John Lester at some point tonight.
Here's the slightly frightening thing with John Lester. And
He doesn't hold runners any worse than Aroldis Chapman. He doesn't throw to first, but he's so quicker. Quick to he's the quicker. Plate.
But
so
no, that's
the
but hold
think
on.
It's overplayed.
But no, the thing I would say with that though is that one thing about it is what also makes John Lester as far as holding runners is having David Ross behind the plate.
That's the other.
And
part.
That is where this gets much more complicated because, okay,
I think Wilson Contreras is good. But I'm fine. You know, Wilson Contreras has made one glaring mistake behind the plate every game.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know. And my son plays with a kid whose dad's from Puerto Rico, still plays. And every game of the World Series, he's telling the other kids on the team, something Baez did, something Lindor did. He may as well, he wore his Crabbers shirt to practice last night.
So too sad.
But he loves Wilson Contreras. And Wilson Contreras had that pick of the 102-mile-an-hour pitch in the dirt. That was amazing.
It was an amazing athletic.
But he made a mistake last night right through the five hole. He makes a mistake every night. So that is the other factor. I still think, A, the Cubs have three catchers on their roster.
Right.
B, you start Contreras. And when Lester comes in, so does Ross. And I don't think the drop-off is that significant.
But I was
going
to say, but you do have to.
Not for one game.
But you have to prep for that. Like, that is something that, okay, that's how you're going to do it.
And again, we don't know that Joe Maddon will prep for it because he might be thinking about his turducken right now. I mean, seriously, where was the guy's mind last night? It was Pixies-esque. Where was his mind?
Because the thing about it is when you say, oh, it's easy to say that after Rizzo hit the home run. No. I mean, like, I was listening at that point. For some reason, I was listening to the Cubs radio broadcast. And they were saying when Rizzo... I don't see. It's kind of dark over there, but I don't see anyone up in the bullpen.
That's it. So, I mean, like, seriously, his feet were in the air and his head were in the clouds.
I went mute on Twitter because I did say that if Chapman pitched the ninth, I was going to be speechless, and Chapman came out and pitched the ninth. So I went like, okay, I got to live to my word. I'm off Twitter the rest of the night. But I think that tweet started before, you know, like, or you asked the question before, like, why would Chapman pitch the ninth here?
Doesn't make any sense.
Because again, they were the bottom of the lineup too.
That's the other part of it. So again, with coaches or managers, all I've ever asked in these things is to be consistent. I've talked about this on podcasts for years, you know, like with Stanford, you know, like in 2000, when the official box score says Jason Young threw 178 pitches. And I asked Mark Marquess after that game, I didn't say, why the F did you pitch this guy for 178 pitches? Don't you know he's going to be a top five pick next year? He's still got $2 million. But well, you know, why did you pitch this guy for 178 pitches? And his explanation was, oh, he had extra rest. With longer rest, pitch counts aren't the same. I don't like short rest. Then 3 years later in Omaha, John Hudgens goes 350 pitches in 10 days. So he talks out of both sides of his mouth. So again, it's the same thing with Joe Maddon. How can you talk about the way you're going to think ahead and that, in this case, Chapman was the right call because it was Lindor in the middle of the lineup. And I agree. But then to not think ahead and think, okay, I've got at least a 5-run lead. I can get three outs against the bottom of the lineup.
I've got Strope, Edwards, and Wood to get three outs. And we're going...
Anybody. Whoever you want. Right. If you wanted John Lackey last night, you could have gotten John Lackey for now.
Right. You've got all those guys. Can we get three outs?
And give up four runs.
Five runs, not because they end up giving up one.
Yeah.
But five runs, not we're talking about after the Rizzo home run. We're talking about literally the minute you came into the dugout to start the ninth. Okay, we have gotten through the heart of that order. Okay, Chapman has gotten us to this point. Can we use their basically the entire rest of our bullpen minus Montgomery/Chapman?
Yeah.
And get three outs.
How about the fact that I do think we've hit that one a lot.
Yeah.
I am one of their
Indians
passers.
Outfield.
Indians outfield contrasted with Cubs outfield. Jason Hayward has gotten a little bit better through this World Series.
But Jason Hayward's
finally turned his brain off, it seems, and he's making some harder contact. And he made two excellent plays defensively.
But I was going to say defensively, there's never been defensively.
Right.
That's the reason.
But it really shows up.
Yeah.
In contrast to Lonnie baseball. I mean, Lonnie Chisenhall has had a rough World Series.
Yes.
Really rough.
But let me ask you also with that. Okay, tonight.
Seth Rowe in the ninth inning, you weren't watching, you were listening.
Yeah.
Jason Hayward threw out at second base.
By the way, but
that was an epic throw.
It was an epic throw. At the same time, you want to talk about turning your brain off.
Yes.
Ooh, it's really important I get to second
exactly.
here because we only need eight more hits.
Right, exactly.
Do I think, you know, okay, we've got to eliminate the chance of a double play here. Don't worry, if you hit a ground out for that's like a double play, you're already not going to win.
That was a mistake. That was a bad play.
But no, what I was going to say on that, though, is that, okay, tonight, if you're Cleveland, if you're Terry Francona, first question. I mean, Lonnie Chisenhall is still probably your right fielder tonight. I don't think you...
That's a question for me. I mean, like, Tyler Naquin is what? Over 25 with 16 strikeouts?
The thing to me that seems...
Don't tell Teddy Cahill.
The thing that seems easy to me is that Tyler Naquin is not in the lineup tonight.
Correct. To me, Roger Davis and Coco Crisp are in the lineup no matter what.
Okay, because if you do that, though...
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, you're going to lose the platoon advantage, Matt Eddy says.
You're not going to just... But again, to me, Chisenhall's still in there because... Tyler Naquin right now is not giving you, he's an inferior defender in center, and he doesn't hit right now.
That play last night with him and Chisenhall seemed like, because Chisenhall ran hard at it, which I assume he's supposed to do, but because he ran hard at it, Naquin deferred when the center fielder probably shouldn't defer. But then the fact that Chisenhall overran the ball, that play is such an inexplicable play. It really was a huge play. I mean, 1-0 versus 3-0 is just a giant difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a game like that, and certainly made Arrieta, you know, a lot more comfortable. I have to say also, JJ, going back to the pitching, but I just think the contrast between the way Chisenhall's played defensively in right field and the way Hayward has played in right field is that's a yawning gap. And in a series like this where the teams are fairly close, really come into play several times. Something as small as right field defense.
Because it wasn't just that Jason Hayward had a great night defensively last night. He had the throw. He had a dive and catch. He had all that. He's done that. I mean, we had the play. We had a play down the line at Wrigley where he's going to go into the and then he catches. You know, he's made a multitude of plays that are difficult plays to make.
Yeah. So the other option with the the Indians tonight could be Brandon Guyer. Even if it's right, you can't tell me Brandon Guyer can't wear one against Kyle Hendricks. I mean, he's a professional hit batsman guy. Go out there and wear one, you know. Put on your glasses and your wig if you have to. It's close enough to Halloween. You can dress up from the kid in Bad News Bears. But just take one for the team. I think Brandon Guyer could do that for you one time. I would be extremely tempted if the evaluation of the Indians, who know their players way better than I do, but if their evaluation is Brandon Guyer's a superior defender to Lonnie Chisenhall, I'd do it. And I would take the platoon disadvantage and I would play Guyer in right field over Chisenhall because Chisenhall has just made too many mistakes.
But the other thing is when you're thinking platoon advantage tonight, you can think also longer term.
Yeah.
Okay, who are you going to face tonight?
Correct. You're going to face in the last half of the game. You're almost guaranteed that you're going to either face Chapman, Montgomery, or Lester. Mm-hmm. And they're all left-handed.
Yep. So what I'm saying is that, yes, you may be giving up something for 4 to 5 innings, but I think that's the maximum of what you're talking.
You know, JJ, the other debate that we had here in the office yesterday, Matt Eddy and I had, was about the Cubs lineup and where you'd hit Kyle Schwarber. And when the news came out that Schwarber was going to hit second, I just disputed that. And I thought that the only reason – so Matt and I had this pretty interesting discussion, and we might bring Kyle Glazer in on this one if he wakes up enough. We'll have to come in as we record this. But you know, my argument was Zobrist has given you consistently good at-bats throughout the series. He's had the most polished approach throughout your season, and that's who Ben Zobrist is. Mm-hmm. And if you hit him two-hole, you don't have a base clogger up high, and you go switch hitter, in Fowler and Zobrist, and then you could go Schwarber-Bryant-Rizzo, you could go Rizzo-Bryant-Schwarber. There are any permutations of left-right-left there. And you avoid stacking your left-handers. Mm-hmm. You make that tough. If it had been a close game for Andrew Miller, I would argue Rizzo, Bryant, Schwarber. Obviously, they stuck with Bryant. They wanted Bryant to hit in the first inning. Came through with a home run. And they wanted Schwarber in that two-hole, and Schwarber was Schwarber. So it worked out for them last night. How would you do their lineup? Would you go Zobrist two-hole? Or would you? I think Schwarber should hit five-hole. That's just me.
Right. To be honest, to me, it's one of those that's like, it's okay either way, because really what we are talking about right now, Chicago largely has a five-man. It's going to be some combination.
Well, Russell had 6 RBIs.
Russell was huge last night.
I mean, and obviously one of them was fluke. Two of them were fluke, but the Grand Slam was
no fluke.
Second longest home run he's had in his career. It was Nathan Rhodey would say hashtag crushed.
But But I do think that the thing, again, when you talk about platoon, you're thinking long-term tonight. The reality of it is that you can stack them if you want or not. It doesn't really matter that much tonight to me, because the guys you're going to face, you're not going to face a lefty specialist who's coming right. in to face Schwarber, you know, and then he's going to leave the game.
Right.
You're facing him, whether you get Andrew Miller and it's, I mean, again, if you wanted to put, you know, if you wanted to even go Bryant, Rizzo, Schwarber, tonight, what is the impact of that? Because you're not going to face a lefty specialist.
Right.
And if Cody Allen comes in the game, they're not pulling Cody Allen. These two guys are going to pitch.
Yeah.
Once and they're going to pitch extended. You can almost basically set it up where the reality of it is if you're Madden, if you put those guys back to back, it's not. It may slightly change what Francona thinks. And to be honest, you know, you're not going to. It doesn't to me make a massive difference either way, because Miller is. I don't care if you're right-handed or left-handed. He's pretty just, much unhittable.
He's just hateful, right. No matter what. If you're a hitter, he's hateful.
Right, and they don't have. I mean, again, everyone's available tonight, but I cannot envision another lefty who is going to come into the game.
Well, it's not going to be Ryan Merritt. That's the only other left-hander they have, and that's who's warming up last
night. He's not coming into the game, so you do not have to worry tonight if you're the Cubs that by stacking two lefties together,
right.
that you're going to play into the hands of, well, they've got this guy who's deaf on lefties, but you want a right-hander to face him. That guy doesn't exist.
Right. It's really, I do think the lineup construction is fascinating to think of for one game with everything on the table. I also think where the Cubs are in the lineup will depend on who Terry Frank will help dictate who Terry Francona uses first. If it's toward the bottom of the lineup and you think Kluber's done or you need to go get Kluber, I assume you go Cody Allen, because the bottom of the Cubs lineup has Hayward, but then the predominantly right-handed hitters with whoever the catcher is, the incredibly pitchable Javier Baez. How about Javier?
Bounce it
95 down the middle and he's frozen. I mean, that guy is so lost. And you see, he swings and misses at a breaking ball. He steps out of the batter's box. He's like, what do I do now? You can just see on his face, this incredibly confident hitter and player is totally just like, he's just lost.
And to his credit,
he doesn't carry over
to his credit. I was thinking the exact same thing, was to his credit. And then you put him out in the field, it's like, okay, best second baseman. I mean, seriously,
sick,
when you say.
Sick defense.
Who
is that?
Who is a better defensive second baseman you've seen? Better than Roberto Alomar to me.
I guess in my life, who's the best defensive second baseman? The first person who always comes to mind when you say second base is Robbie Cano. So he's got Cano's arm strength and hands, probably better hands, with more athleticism and twitch. So
he's a better version of Brandon Phillips to me, like also another guy.
That's a good call.
Because he was a shortstop who moved to second. Although in Phillips' case, Baez moved because, in his case, you know, there's Addison Russell.
Well, that's
Phillips
great...
moved because, for some reason, this doesn't work in shortstop.
Yeah,
for him.
That's the great thing about the draft tracker from 2011 I found last night. It's from the 150 scout game between the Arlington Country Day and Monteverde Academy.
The Oscar game of Oscar games.
Yes. What starts is that Lindor and Baez played on the same team in Jupiter at the Perfect Game World of Bat Association Championships. So because they were teammates, Baez deferred to Lindor and always either played third base or catcher. Timmy Wilkins saw him behind the dish and just decided he had to see him to see how his hands work. I mean, it's just think about Javi Baez's hands and arm.
You think Wilson Contreras looks athletic back there?
Yeah. So
you know, like, but the thing about it is it would be a shame in many ways, because it's like, he's got. We would never know that he's the greatest tagger we've ever seen.
Exactly.
Like, he gets three. You know that one play at the plate he had in June. It was epic.
Yeah, I mean, like, seriously, we would have lost out on that one. But Kyle Glazer does join us now, and Kyle, you were actually in Wrigley, games 3, 4, and 5. So obviously, you have a little bit different perspective than we do. But I mean, what do you think the tension level is going to be like in Chicago, having been there and just seeing how? We don't have an explicit tag, but how crazy they were there.
It'll be absolutely wild. You know, it was interesting when I got there, the plane, the morning, and then the morning of, and then game three, the streets around Wrigley were absolutely packed. It was a festive atmosphere. It was kind of like Mardi Gras. I mean, people were just packed, and 5 hours before game time, the L stop at Addison was packed. I mean, it's 2 p.m. on a Friday. Clearly, everyone took work off, and was just there at the bars. I mean, the bars were open and serving at 10 a.m. So it was an absolute, you know, madhouse. But it was interesting watching how it changed and progressed through the weekend. So Friday night, I was so excited, so happy. Oh my gosh, we're finally here. This is finally happening. And then Friday night's game happens, and Saturday, the same number of people were there, but it was much more subdued. And I was walking around, I was like, okay, is it just me? Then I met up with Tom Withers, the AP. He's like, no, like, you can feel it. There was a sense of, you know, that initial excitement, and then, oh crap, now I forgot how much it actually hurts when we get here and we lose.
Right.
So now we're down 2-1, and Kluber's pitching, and everyone just kind of was like, there was definitely more of a, well, all right, you know, let's go. But it was nowhere near the same atmosphere. It was amazing what 24 hours does. Then they lose that game. And on Sunday, you wouldn't have known you were in Chicago and it was Wrigley Field and it had been 1945. I mean, maybe a third of those many people. I mean, you could walk in the streets, no problem. The L stop, there's no issue getting off. The cops didn't need their mounted horses yet like they did on Friday night, 4 hours before first pitch. I mean, it was, crap, we're down 3-1. And it was really cold, so yeah. Less people were coming out on Sunday. And just the atmosphere changed. And you could even tell from the games, you know, Friday night, first pitch, yeah! And then Sunday, it was a cautious, like, okay, we're happy. But up until really even the end, and the end was like a cathartic, you know, celebration. As soon as Chapman got the final out and they actually won a game at Wrigley, all the tension was released. Yeah. And I actually think the hardest partying was that Sunday night after that win where, you know, I stayed a little later just because I was doing some wrap-up stuff from the home series. You could hear the screams and the hoots and the hollers out around the stadium. You could hear the police blowing their whistles. I mean, it was, you know, I think, you know, from a pure just, yes, we got one at Wrigley on Sunday night was absolutely wild. And I want to add that Saturday night being, you know, the night, you know, that Halloween was celebrated, mm-hmm. It was a very funny visual walking out of Wrigley Field at midnight, and you see a bunch of Cubs fans and some zombies and some sexy cheerleaders. It was a very weird conflagration of people that was just a funny visual.
That is really funny.
But it was definitely quite the scene, but I really thought it was interesting seeing just the ebb and flow, how even, yes, this excitement of being in Chicago, it isn't immune to, oh crap, we're down 3-1.
Like, both fan bases are so, just the agony and losing are so baked into both franchises.
This is going to be wonderful for some, you know, for one fan base tonight, and it is going to be crushing for another.
You definitely, I don't believe in curses, but I do believe in karma. I definitely wonder, I mean, I'm sure you guys saw the LeBron James Halloween party with the 3-1, all the 3-1 jokes that Cleveland fans have made since the Warriors blew that lead. But like the 3-1, he had what 3-1 lead as the was on the bass drum for the house band at his Halloween party. I mean, the Cleveland fan base has beaten that into the ground.
If and this the Indians would just lose, it's LeBron James's fault. That's saying, what you're saying.
That's number one. And then number two, just karma is a biatch. It just does not like to be messed with.
You know,
period. It does not like to be. You just can't do that if you're Cleveland for 4 months and not and get away with it.
I mean,
that's
so,
possible.
But no, go. So who do y'all think again tonight is? First question, how geeked are y'all for tonight?
Because this we're pretty geeked in this podcast. So
it'll be great. You know, it was really interesting. And again, this was something that you could gather a little bit, but physically being there, I saw it on and felt it on a whole different scale. You know, for those first few games, you know, 3 and 4, the Cubs were like, oh, you know, we're a good team. We're just going to play our game and we'll win. And it really wasn't until game 5. And they didn't try and pretend. It was in their words. It was in their actions. You could see it in their play. It was, okay, like, we actually need to dial up the intensity. You know, Rizzo talked about it. We were too laid back. You know, I throw on Rocky, you know, before right. the game to get us with Dexter Fowler. You know, our blood pressure needed to get higher. We got it higher, and it's going to stay higher. I mean, there was this active decision within the Cubs clubhouse leaders, not Joe Maddon, but the right. clubhouse leaders,
but
to
clearly
say,
not Joe Maddon. Joe Maddon said, in game 5.
Well, not so, because you saw Maddon manage with a greater sense of urgency. And I thought it was interesting how on game 4, the press was just grilling him over, why didn't you use Schwarber when you were down 3-1 in the 5th?
Right.
You know, you're not managing the urgency. And, you know, it was interesting just watching the press grill him.
The narrative definitely built. The Cubs were such favorites that as they fell behind, the narrative definitely grew that well, the Cubs are better on paper, so they must be blowing it on the, in the managerial in the dugout, which I kind of agreed with.
I think that discounts just how good Cleveland was this year and how good their pitching staff has been. I will say, though, that for Madden to, you know, bring in Chapman that game five really did change some things in terms of, okay, we're managing with more urgency now, but it started with the players and their actions, and even their at-bats, there was a little bit more, you know, I mean, the
quality... they didn't give away at-bats,
Right, the quality of the at-bats start to finish, even though they only scored that one inning.
Right.
The quality of the at-bats start to finish, which is so visibly better.
And Addison, the two at-bats in that game were Addison Russell's swinging bunt that he didn't strike out with two strikes, which he'd been striking out all series, and then the bunt by Baez. Those were two selfless at-bats that were much more competitive than those two hitters had over the duration of the series.
And so I really did think, you know, game five, the way the Cubs won it, where they made that conscious, active decision to, quote-unquote, get the blood pressure up. None of this BS cliche, which I actually am not a fan of. Just another game. No, right. It's not. Exactly. This is what you've dreamed about since you were 9 years old. Stop pretending otherwise. So for me, seeing that and then watching them carry that over, this sense of, we're not messing around, no more of this, we're just going to play our game, let's get up there, and then as soon as that outfield collapse, if you will, the Cubs smelled blood and went for the kill. They put together good at-bats all the way through and just went for it, which I think portends well, but I really think this turnaround started with their active, conscious decision in Game 5.
Yep.
Now, I don't want to pick against Corey Kluber in a Game 7, but I think the Cubs are in better position to beat him than they were Games 1 or 4, not just because of, you're seeing a guy for a third time, but because there has been a visible and, you know, reported change of mindset, which, you know, some people out there on the Twitter sphere are like, chemistry is overblown. I'm telling you, I was there. You felt it. The players talked about it. Everyone who was there saw it, felt it, acknowledged it, and we're seeing it play out.
Yeah, I think they were too casual, and I definitely agree the intensity's been ratcheted up. I think Madden has totally reacted to his players. They didn't react to him.
No, this was a player-driven.
I think the players started it, and I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's how it seemed from afar. And
as soon as Anthony Rizzo threw Rocky on in the pregame clubhouse before Game 5, that got going.
It still hasn't been a great look for Madden. The whole series hasn't been a great look, and they could still win the series. And they were 9 games better than the Indians during the year. As good as the Indians were, the Cubs were 9 games better. So the Indians are good.
They're 9 games better, and the Cubs...
and healthier.
And the Cubs have... if you look at them right now, you would say that this is the team that they had designed when the season began, because they've had a chance.
Plus Schwarber.
And they've gotten Schwarber. Yeah. You know, whereas if you look at Cleveland, you would say this is not the team that they... They're Brantley-less.
Yep.
They're Salazar.
Well, mostly Salazar-less. Yeah. He came in last night.
I know he didn't throw a lot last night, and he didn't throw tremendous, but he
looked good.
He broke off some pretty darn good changeups. Is there any second-guessing, or you think any second-guessing within the Indians of, man, maybe we should have started Salazar in Game 6 instead of Tomlin?
You know, my issue with that is simply that Tomlin pitched really well at Wrigley in Game 3.
Didn't go 5 innings.
But that was because, you know, Francona made a decision based. It wasn't because, 4 2/3 innings,
right,
3 hits, 58 pitches, he was moving quickly. You know, Francona made a choice, and, you know, obviously it worked out given that they won. But it wasn't anything like Tomlin did not struggle. He did not look out of sorts. So for me, given that he's pitched well against this team on the road, he has a home game. And we really didn't know what Salazar had. I mean, this was a guy who, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe his first playoff appearance did not go that great.
Right.
You know, so something where you're not going to start a guy who, when you have a guy who has started in the World Series and started well in the World Series, versus a guy who hasn't started a game now in... September 9th. So almost 8 weeks, 6.5, 7 weeks. And his one showing wasn't that great. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer, and it's a total hindsight move that, let me put it this way, I think if they did start Salazar and it didn't go well, it would have been, what are they doing? They have a guy who just threw and was great, and they're starting out for the first time in 8 weeks. I mean, to me, that's the hindsight police getting out of line.
No, but
I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all. Just wanted to ask.
How long do we think that, I mean, again, this is, the thing that's also going to be fascinating tonight is, this is one area where I do think that there's a slight advantage for the Cubs on this. If you are Chicago tonight, and it sounds crazy, the Indians have an advantage because Corey Kluber versus Hendricks, I think it's still an advantage
Yes.
Kluber as good as Hendricks has been.
And Hendricks a lot better at home, too. It's 132 ERA at home, 295 on the road. 295 on the road is still good. But one thing I will give for Hendricks is that it was at home, but game six, a lot of pressure facing Kershaw. He was at his best in probably his most pressure-packed start of his career. But
the thing that I do think, though, is that if you're the Cubs, Hendricks, everyone should tonight be on almost a batter-by-batter.
Correct.
And with Hendricks, there's going to be no problem with that. Hendricks is on a batter-by-batter. It is a little tougher when you've got Corey Kluber.
Right.
If Corey Kluber is game one Corey Kluber, it doesn't matter because you're watching that and you go, no, this is not batter-by-batter because you
Well, it is batter-by-batter. He's just getting them all out.
But, but if Corey Kluber is more like game four Kluber, there is that...
Cuban Kluber, not the Klubot.
There is that more of that tendency, though. He's Kluber. You're not going to pull him in the second. You're not going to pull him in the third.
But Shaw has been so good.
And Miller has been so good. I don't think either of them go five tonight.
Well, but
here's
the thing that where I like, and that's going to sound weird. If you're going to lose game six, if you're Cleveland, lose it the way you did so you don't have to put in. I mean, Shaw, Alan Miller are all rested.
Right. And Francona, I mean,
as soon as they went down 7-0, you know, one of my best friends is a diehard Indians fan, and his texting was like, look. And we were saying, if you're going to lose, this is how you lose, so you don't burn those guys. So now all of them are going to come in with two full days of rest.
Yep.
You know, they'll have had a travel day, they'll have the day off. So it's not just a matter of your ace is going on the mound. You have your ace and your three-headed monster in the bullpen. And I thought the most telling quote the entire time I was in Chicago, and I love Joe Madden's quote, when someone, you know, said, how do you beat these guys? He said, if you're losing to them in the fifth, you're done. I mean, he just flat out admitted. He said, in order for us to win, we have to get an early lead and stay out of the middle of the bullpen. If we don't do that, we do not win. And
I hope he doesn't say that to his team before game seven, because that will not be helpful.
You know what? It's in the media transcripts for games three, four, five. I mean, it's all there. He's never made a secret of it. And the truth is, the players know that. I mean, you know, yes, they're competitors. Yes, they're professionals. They know how dirty those three are. And there's absolutely a sense of when those three are in the game, oh crap, we're in trouble. And they don't, and that's one thing I kind of like about this Cubs team is, and I think they take this from their manager Madden, they're fairly honest. This is not a group that gives you the same old, oh, you know, we just want to win and we believe in ourselves. Like, no, they'll tell you what they need to do and either do it or don't. And
I think Cubs fans would take any win, but I think they would take it even more. I think they would love it if they went through Cody Allen or Andrew Shaw. Miller, and I think they'd like it if they went through Corey Kluber, and that would make it all the more sweet. But honestly, let's be honest, they would love it if they went through the ghost of Charlie Sheen and Wild Thing coming out of the
old
Hoff
Radborn, which, you know, one of the better Twitter followers. He made the point. He said, like, you know, I would, you know, love to be in a game seven. You know, they would love to go through old Hoss Radborn.
But the one thing that Francona did say yesterday is, if we were going to lose, we wanted to lose where we saved our bullpen, which they did, and we wanted to make them use Chapman, which they did, and stay competitive enough to make them use Chapman. And so if you're going to lose, they lost exactly the way they wanted to. I'll throw in a couple things Kenny Rosenthal said, and then we can wrap up. Kenny Rosenthal wrote to
this
morning. We got
to make our Game 7 picks to wrap it up.
Right, now that's how we'll wrap up.
Okay.
Rosenthal notes that Lester, according to this, that he will be likely the Cubs' first reliever, according to sources. His personal catcher, David Ross, will enter with him, likely play the rest of the way in the final game of his career. And then he also noted that Francona was asked if he thought about starting Rajai Davis over Tyler Naquin, because Davis was 1-for-25 until getting two hits in his last two at-bats of Game 5.
And a couple stolen bases that made things interesting.
Right. Then Naquin with a failed catch in Game 6. So Naquin's 4-for-23 in the series with 14 strikeouts. Davis is slightly rated better by the metrics. So we talked about this earlier before you got here. For me, I'm starting Davis
I'm
and
starting
Crisp
Davis.
In the outfield no matter what. And I think I would also start Guyer too. Platoon advantage be damned. Chisenhall has not played well defensively
and
the whole series.
Platoon advantage is not really that significant when you talk about a situation where you're probably going to see more than half of the outs tonight are going to come against lefties.
Yeah, so to me, Guyer and Davis start, and then I want Crisp. He's 37. He's been through a lot. He's won a World Series. I have high trust in Coco Crisp and a lot less trust right now in Chisenhall
and Naquin. Coco Crisp has also, you know, I wrote about it in that Game 3 story.
Yeah.
And then after that, he went and had a double. I mean, he's been a great, great
One thing, again, one minor thing to remember of Coco Crisp, though, just because it has not shown up since the Red Sox series, Cocoa Crisp arm.
It's not been exposed. It's a sitting duck.
But it's sitting back there. Just to remember, if you have a key situation, and they have at times in the past tried to cover that up in later innings by getting him out of there. If the ball is hit to Cocoa Crisp in the late innings and there is a runner on second and his name is not Schwarber.
Oh, I think Schwarber's running anyway.
But anyone else, there's a pretty good chance that he's scoring. Maybe Montero.
I will say, you know, I think about this. I think it's interesting, again, as we're doing Prospect Handbook, if you say, all right, a team's going to be in Game 7 of the World Series and you're not laughing at their chances starting an outfield of Brandon Guyer, Rajay Davis, and Cocoa Crisp, it's interesting. I mean, those guys at this point in their career are all, what, 40s, 45s?
Well, yeah.
But
Davis is 36, Crisp is 37.
But, I mean, they're greats. I mean, you know, there's some speed, there's some hitability, but a lot of them are up there slash platoon guys. And
well, they're not – I mean, that's the thing is that the Indians have – They do not have many profile guys in that outfield.
No, yeah, they don't have any.
I mean, really, I would argue Naquin is one, but there's some issues, obviously, with the defense right now and the communication. I just think it's interesting, you know, talking about, you know, this idea of if you're not, you know, a 60, you know, 55, 60 player, you're not going to play for a winning team. But if you're put in the right spots, it depends right. a lot on your organization.
This does, and this group, like you look at last year, I will say there has never been less of a profile shortstop than the Mets shortstop.
Right. Wilmer Flores, yeah, absolutely.
It does happen.
Yep.
And before that was Ruben Tejada before he got his leg snapped.
Although I'd say Tejada.
He's like an 80s profile shortstop. Yeah. Yeah, so I'll throw one last intersection of these two teams on the Cocoa Crisp note. Shout out to Bob Lafrano, who coached him at L.A. Pierce Junior College, and now Bob's athletic director at Pierce, but he also is a part-time scout for the Cubs. So I just think it's kind of funny that he's obviously rooting on the Cubs, but he'll have a soft spot if Cocoa wins another World Series. So I do think, even though all the pitching advantages are Cleveland, I know the best team doesn't always win, but I do think the better team will win. I think the Cubs have a lot of momentum on their side. I love how they're performing offensively. I think Bryant, Rizzo, at their best, are good enough to scratch some runs off Cleveland. So I think the Cubs will win tonight. JJ and Kyle, what say you guys? JJ wants to go last.
You know, I am going to go Indians. I just, you know, for me, it's they're at home. They've got all the pitching advantages lined up, you know, first inning through ninth inning.
Yep.
And to me, that'll be the X factor. I think the Indians will scrape across just enough off of a, you know, out of their element, you know, Lester slash Lackey. And that'll be enough for their Kluber goes five. Then, you know, Shaw, Allen, Miller take the final four in some order and they're set.
I will also say Cleveland. I think it's, I mean, it could obviously, this is just like one game. It could go any whatever way. But I think, and I don't even think Kluber goes five. I think, again, to me, as good as Kluber is, Andrew Miller is the basically the unhittable one in this scenario. And so.
But Cody Allen, to me, is gettable.
Cody Allen's very good.
All it takes is one hang breaking ball.
But with Andrew
though,
Miller,
he's performed almost on par with Miller this postseason.
Almost, but not quite.
But it's been, since they're superhuman, it's still been
I just
elite.
Don't think, it's been elite, and he is outstanding. I do not think he has Miller's air of invincibility that gives Andrew Miller a little extra something.
But again, the thing I come back to is with arrested Miller, I don't want to, if I'm a Cleveland fan, I don't want to see him for one. I don't want to see him for two.
I wouldn't mind seeing him through the order twice. I really, as long if he could go through it, if he could give you four,
I don't know why you can't see a Bumgarner-esque kind of game seven where you say it's yours and we'll figure out. And again, everyone's batter by batter, so you have guys getting ready. It's game seven. You're not worrying about that, you know, whether you're burning the guy by having him get up in the pen,
right?
But I do think with Miller, like you get if Kluber can get me, if I'm the Indians, if Kluber can get me through the lineup, through the third, and then in the fourth, we are even looking at, okay, if he's cruising, great. If he's not, if I'm Cleveland, I want Andrew Miller to be in that game for as long as I can tonight.
I would agree, and if I were the Cubs, I would want to see him in there too, but only if you have a lead. So get there 8 minutes early, 8 o'clock Eastern time start. I wish it was a 7:30 start or a 7 o'clock start, but it's not. So we know that if you're listening to this podcast, you'll enjoy it. Rate us on iTunes. Don't forget about our 30 days of giveaways. Check us out on custom all of our social
today.
Channels.
Custom bat today. We had a great giveaway yesterday with the Wilson A2000.
Are we eligible as employees?
No.
Darn it. No.
I really want that bat.
No, it really is.
There are small downsides to working for Baseball America. That is one of them.
I think every time I tweet it out, I basically have made the point, like, I can't win this, but you can.
Yeah.
You
know? So, and they're cool gifts. So we're on day two. So 29 more to go. Drink it in. Game 7 of the World Series. We hope you enjoy it. We know we've enjoyed it so far, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast. So for Kyle and JJ, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.